Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the Green Business Podcast, Sustainability on a Budget. I'm Jonathan Howell, Energy Advisor for the Decarbonisation Net Zero Programme, and I'll be your host for today's session, which, to be honest, I'm really looking forward to. We have a returning guest speaker today who last spoke on the podcast back in May 2023. He is, in my opinion, an innovator within the sustainability sector and is the perfect guest for today's topic. So just to set the scene for today's discussion, to tell you what to expect today, often businesses that we deal with have to invest in resource and equipment as part of their sustainability improvements. Now, this could be the cost of employing a sustainability manager, cost of engaging with a consultancy to establish a strategy, or even investing in energy efficiency measures such as solar PV and more efficient machinery. So what we wanted to do today was bring you some guidance for those SME businesses who perhaps don't have that capital or labour budget available within the business to improve their sustainability, or may just want some good impartial advice on how to start their journey and what the benefits are. So to help with the discussion, I'd like to welcome back to the podcast Adam Bastock from Small 99. Good morning, Adam.
Morning, Jonathan. Nice to be here again.
Yeah, thanks for joining. So just to kick off then, Adam, can you give our audience a bit of background on yourself, on Small 99, and also perhaps share what first ignited your passion for sustainability?
Perfect. Thank you. Yeah, no. So I've been working with small businesses for about 10, 15 years now, really, originally in digital marketing terms. So that's where I started my career, was working in-house doing digital marketing with small businesses, but then wanted to really do something a bit more, sustainable, give back a bit more, something a bit more exciting, perhaps. And I think the thing that I saw is that if we are in race to net zero, that actually small businesses can move the quickest. They typically can make decisions in days, hours, months, rather than the years, which kind of corporations do. And I was seeing this real gap that small businesses were being left behind with the advice, often, as you've identified, being extremely expensive and out of reach for a lot of those small businesses. So started Small 99 about 3-4 years ago now to try and fill that gap with practical advice that really spoke to that small business to say, here are the things that are going to make you more sustainable but also more money, and it's something that's going to be, you know, the right thing for you to do and just get you started, but also it's not going to be something that is cost prohibitive either, and hopefully you can get started relatively, you know, either for free or for relatively low investment.
Yeah, goes up. And I suppose as well, in terms of the context, I think there is a percentage that I think is about 94-95% of UK companies that are SMEs. So we're talking about a large amount of companies that you can help basically moving forward. So fantastic. So moving on to the first proper question then, as it were, and I appreciate this might be a very broad question, and it could vary by sector and business size, but in your experience, what are the key and what are the biggest sustainability challenges that businesses do face today that you've dealt with?
So I think the biggest one is knowing where to start, to a certain extent. I think it's often a topic people are coming to perhaps because of being asked to from supply chain or from some sort of external pressure, or they're wanting to do the right thing, but they're just not sure really where to start. And the classic phrase that we hear is sustainability is not top priority right now, especially given the past 2 years of the economic environment where it's a big pressure for everybody. And I think that's against the backdrop, especially at the time of recording, with a lot of the regulation shifting where, so just for those who are listening at the minute, the EU corporate sustainability reporting directive is all in shift and is being changed at the minute. It's being simplified, but it's not been agreed yet. So if you're a small business in a supply chain of a larger business, it might be that you're not sure what's going to be impacting you in the next kind of 12 months, 2 years, 3 years, and therefore it's quite difficult to plan. The benefit of that is that obviously the more you plan and get ahead on sustainability, the more you'll be prepared anyway. But I think it is that not knowing where to start, that lack of advice that is affordable, that isn't overwhelming.
Yes.
And on the flip side, you know, most businesses that we've spoken to, so I've trained probably about 3,000 businesses over the past 2-3 years through webinars, workshops, engaging with them. It is that they don't need convincing on the solutions. It's the access to capital to actually deliver that.
I
think this is something that might be changing. More banks are offering green loans at the minute, but even then it's knowing where to find them, you know, what are the requirements, and it's so fragmented in terms of location. So something that is available in Coventry might not be available in Birmingham, might not be available in Worcester, or vice versa. And that's where the frustration comes from.
Yeah, no, I get that. Good answer. So this is a bit of a general question really then. Do you ever see any businesses that are resistant to sustainability, that perhaps have a sort of misconceptions that it's not needed, or they don't feel any benefits at all? Just sort of, I suppose it's a bit of a paradox there, because therefore they wouldn't have approached you. But in your experience, what could a companies out there that just don't want to engage and don't want to go on any sort of journey, in your opinion?
Yeah, so of those businesses that I've spoken to, a lot of those are at kind of conferences or at events where they're not there for sustainability. And I've been sort of parachuted in for a 10, 15 minute talk on sustainability. Yeah. So fairly good exposure to the more hesitant, perhaps, businesses out there. The main thing for me is that of those businesses, I've encountered on, you know, I can count on two hands the amount of people who have not been interested in sustainability in some way out of those thousands. It's a much smaller element. I think most business owners or most people who are running a business want to do the right thing. And I think most people know that sustainability is important. And certainly at a local level, things like increased flooding, increased air pollution for children's health, etc., is all something that plays on people's minds. It might not be top of mind compared to paying the mortgage and paying staff, but it is still an awareness. So I think in terms of misconceptions or where I think business owners really have the gap in knowledge is around quantification. And there's a lot of confusion, and I say this within the sustainability movement as well, around the actual reality of where carbon emissions are coming from, if you know, and what net zero definitions are. There's still a lot of miscommunication that needs to be cut through there, because an example of this would be that we developed like a higher or lower game. So it's a way to engage teams and get people around the table to go, look, let's try and understand what sustainability is. We ran this at a conference for sustainability professionals last year, where we asked people to put five different actions in order from lowest to highest emissions. And those five actions would have been things like gas heating, kind of electricity for a week, like a kilo of asparagus, driving in a petrol car, and something else. It was kind of five quite random things. And people always put gas heating quite low. And that is despite the fact that if you've got a boiler in your business, that is almost certainly one of the biggest sources of emissions in that. And so it's the scale of misconception there, where these are people who are in the industry, who are doing sustainability, who still, if they don't know how much gas heating contributes to your footprint, then what hope to small businesses have, to a certain extent, you know, that are not doing that. So that's where I think the biggest gap that we're trying to address is bringing that informal sort of understanding and education into businesses, so that they know, actually, if we want to be more sustainable, going paperless probably isn't the main focus. The recycling probably isn't the main focus. How do we stop wasting so much heat that we're producing every week or every winter?
That's actually interesting, because that leads into what we do at our program. We're about identifying those energy efficiency savings. And I find it's quite an easy sell sometimes to people that we're dealing with, because I can do them a report, and I'll explain this later for our audience. I can do you a report that will tell you, here's seven or eight recommendations how to reduce your energy consumption. We can demonstrate pretty accurately what the cost saving benefits are, carbon saving benefits are, and it makes commercial sense to do these things on a small, medium and long term basis. Basically, it's the other things that obviously that we don't do in terms of waste and so on. So that's why this discussion is so interesting. But yeah, I find very often it's easy to engage with people when you can show them a cost saving. It's key for the business. Payback periods are small. You know, go ahead and get it done, basically. So interesting. Thank you. So I'm going to lead into them probably the two best questions that we'll ask today. So this next question is going to be our chance, Adam, to sell this to our audience, basically. Yeah. Can you tell me then the benefits, the main benefits to a business then? We've alluded to it in the last question, but the main benefits to a business of being more sustainable and starting on their net zero journey.
Yeah. So I think the main one is that if you're a business to business company, if you're B2B, then your supply chain is almost certainly under pressure at some point. It might not be directly, but even four, five, six steps removed, they're going to be under pressure to demonstrate carbon footprint reductions, because they are going to be big enough to be targeted by legislation. That means they're going to be coming knocking at your door at some point. That might be this year. It might be next year. It might be 6 months ago.
We see that a lot, actually, when I'm out and about doing audits. We see that a lot. So good answer. Thank you.
Supply chain is the number one thing that we see and we hear from kind of clients as the pressure and wanting to start. And I think the benefit in the minute is, just to flip that and to reassure people, is it's normally quite light touch. It's normally that you need to have an awareness and have started. But most suppliers are aware that most small businesses won't have got the full, you know, detailed carbon footprint and reduction plan in place straight away at this stage. But you do need to be aware of it and start preparing and documenting the actions you're taking. And on that kind of that note of taking action, I think that's where staff engagement and staff retention is really key.
Yeah.
As we've spoken about climate anxiety around local issues already, most staff are going to be aware of that. Most staff want to be working for a company that's doing the right thing. Therefore, and you know, there's plenty of studies out there that have said this around, if you have a demonstrated environmental strategy and are doing the right thing, then you are going to retain staff. They're going to like stay with you longer because they like where they work. On the flip side, if you are business to consumer, I think it's perhaps slightly less tangible in terms of that tendering process. You're not going to be hit by that as much. But again, that climate anxiety is not a problem that's going away anytime soon. And therefore, people do want to buy from brands that are doing the right thing. And the more you can tell that story. And I think great examples of that are like hotel chains, where there's some really interesting like kind of hotels or restaurants that they've got great touch points with customers. And therefore, there's a great brand awareness and brand perception that you can gain there by demonstrating that you've thought about all these small interactions in the organization from a sustainability point of view.
On that specific point, we as a program helped a nightclub in Coventry very recently to put lots of solar panels on their roof, and they put lots of battery storage into the nightclub. It's actually one of our podcasts we did a few months ago. And the soft benefits of that, of course, it was a commercial success, but the soft benefits were, this is a student nightclub in a student area of Coventry. He was seeing increased footfall because students cared about the environment and were going to the club to see how it was set up, basically. And now the positivity of the case study on social media and in the sort of local press has been fantastic for him. So that's a good example, I think, of what you've just mentioned about that brand management and so on, isn't it?
It gives you a story to tell. And I think especially at a competitive point where so many people are searching for that, it's a really interesting kind of perspective where you can, you know, that nightclub can now do guided tours and collaborate with the university to get students in there to say, this is how much energy we're generating during the day that's going to be released during the nighttime. Just very quickly, there's a nightclub in Glasgow that did something similar, but with heat pumps, where they captured the heat from during the evening of all the dancers jumping up and down, and then were storing that in boreholes on site as an energy sort of system, and then releasing it into the nightclub to heat it back up the next day. These solutions are out there. And that's a solution that I've told hundreds of times to businesses you know, the people who aren't doing that, I'm not talking about.
Good stuff. So just to recap then, we're looking at improved social values, staff retention, increased competitiveness, improved company perception, but also, of course, cost-saving benefits as well as the main drivers. So great answer. And that leads me on to then my next most important question. They're the benefits then. What are the best ways that a small business can access support or guidance or advice for those things without incurring much or any cost moving forward?
Yeah, so I think the caveat I would say here is that there's a lot of free advice out there, but it is going to take you time. So you kind of, there's a classic benefit here of weighing up, do you spend your time or do you spend your money? Carbon calculators, there are plenty of free ones out there. Small99 have got one on our website, so you know, you can go and have a poke around on that. There are others out there. There's a great one from, you know, Clean Growth UK is a bit more detailed, and then there's carbon accounting software. Again, there's a myriad of them. I think there's over 200 providers in the UK for that will take your account software and give you a carbon footprint, and they're typically either free or they're, you know, 10 15 20 pounds a month depending on the size of business. So I think from that side of view, the difficulty typically is overwhelm of these options and knowing where to start. So maybe look for industry advice specifically to your sector. So, you know, something that works for a manufacturing client is not necessarily going to work for a nightclub, and therefore you might want slightly different tools for that. I do think also, and I'm not just saying this because I'm on the podcast, but like councils do often run quite a lot of training. It's mostly where we get quite a bit of our income is through hosting training for different councils. Yeah. So do look for free advice out there. Energy audits often, as you've mentioned, are a good easy way to do it. Universities often have support available as well for slightly more unusual R&D or kind of collaboration projects. I'm not sure what is available in sort of the Coventry region, but those are the main places that I recommend going to. As mentioned, there are sometimes banks and stuff will also be running net zero related schemes, and they might be trying to basically sell you green loans at a lower rate, but they'll be providing support for that. So worth contacting your bank as well. We also, so Small99 also run a series of events. We run the biggest sustainability meetup in the UK, and it is growing internationally, called People Planet Pint. We also have People Planet Pastry. But yeah, if you are looking just to meet other people in your local area who may have been through this journey already and you want just to chat over a pint, and have some support that is more informal than having to sign up for a training course, because even free training from the council will take some time for you to go and attend it. If you're free in the evening, go along to the pub. So if you just Google People Planet Pint, there'll be one in your area. So we often have them in kind of Warwick, Leamington, Coventry, Birmingham, Worcester as well. So yeah, there'll be one in your region, hopefully, depending on how far this podcast travels.
Good advice. And just to add to those comments, then, first of all, I have been to a People Planet Pint. Very, very good. A lot of networking opportunities. It was really, really useful to meet like-minded people, basically. And then also on your comment on what councils and universities have available, there is a wealth of data and information available out there in terms of the decarbonisation net zero programme. We have very often big webinars, seminars and so on moving forward. And I know Coventry University do some good work as well. They've done a recent event on CBAM as an example, which was interesting. So what we'll do is we'll drop those links in the podcast description for our audience. If they're of interest for what myself and Adam have mentioned, please have a look at that and get involved, basically. Just moving forward to the next question then, and we've touched on this already previously, and I'll caveat this because we discussed this in a previous podcast, our last podcast on carbon accounting. What metrics should people be looking for to measure? Because I know that really you can't really do much until you've got a measurable baseline. You can't manage what you're not measuring, basically. So what kind of things should people be looking for to get that sort of that carbon accounting is the word I'm looking for, but that kind of carbon accounting baseline moving forward?
Yeah, so I would disagree with you very slightly here in a positive way, where I think the actions, you've probably already taken quite a few actions to reduce your footprint as a business just through energy efficiency measures. And I think don't let the carbon accounting side of things get in the way of action. We know that a train is going to be lower carbon than flying. You don't necessarily need to quantify that in order to start taking that. However, it can be motivational to have those sort of metrics to measure and report on, depending on the organization. But something that we found is it does depend organization to organization how much that sort of reporting empowers and how much of it gets in the way. So I think be honest with yourself in terms of how much you are a data nerd versus perhaps someone who wants to just get on with it and do it. You know, don't let it hold you back. I think with carbon accounting, there's different ways to approach it. So in terms of the sort of metrics to measure, where do I start with this without going to off the deep end immediately? So I think you've got your energy bills are a great place to start. That's why a lot of the support starts there, is because if you've got energy bills that you're paying money for, it's very easy to start quantifying your carbon footprint. However, that tends to then ignore a lot of your actual carbon footprint, which will be tied up in your supply chain, your waste, your transport. So thinking business travel, commuting, visitor travel, those all contribute to your carbon footprint as well. This is where the overwhelm starts coming in, because the more things you're purchasing, and if you're growing as a business, the higher your carbon footprint's going to be. And it might feel like you're starting to, you know, be punished for those decisions. And I think this is where carbon accounting can be quite dangerous, in that if you are, and we've experienced this personally, right? So some of the workshop materials that we produce, they cost about 30 to 40% more to use recycled materials in those than if I was using virgin grade forest in terms of the paper we're using. That is a decision we've made. We want to use recycled materials. That means that technically, if you go into carbon accounting and say that, well, I spent £1,000 this month on paper, it's not necessarily going to reflect the supply chain decision that I've made there. And our footprint would be 30 to 40% higher in this reporting based on the decisions I've made. And so this is where the kind of action versus measurement friction can come in that you making the right decision in reality might on paper increase your footprint slightly. So just something to be aware of there. And I think also in terms of growth versus carbon footprinting, it again, when you're starting on this journey, the first question you might ask is actually, well, our footprint is going to go up the more we grow. The more events we put on, the more we travel to conferences, even if it is by train, the more activity going on, the more your footprint's going to be. And that's the same for Small 99. Our footprint is probably double what it was a year ago because I've been on the train a lot more in the past year. However, this is where you want to focus on the metric, which is the carbon footprint intensity per employee or per turnover. So that might be per £1 million of turnover, £10,000 of turnover, whatever it is. But in theory, if you start measuring year on year using full-time employees equivalent, FTE, so yeah, that can include freelancers, etc., or through per revenue, you should start to see that decarbonisation or that decoupling happen, where the more you are acting on your decarbonisation path, even if your revenue goes up or your staff count goes up, that should be decoupled from the amount of carbon footprint intensity per employee or per revenue that you're seeing there. So that is the one metric that I would really try and focus on and get a handle on. That is going to take a bit of time. And yeah. I think that how you report that depends on how you define it, because if you've only got your energy bills and then the next year you add in employee commuting, again, your footprint's going to go up because you're measuring more. Yeah, so there's ways to manage that. And I wouldn't be too scared by that. But I do think these are the sort of caveats to be aware of.
Good answer. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because we had a really good discussion on carbon accounting only last month on the previous podcast. And if anyone wants to listen to that, we'll put it into the description. And the chap we had on was a carbon consultant, basically, and that was his sweet spot. But he did allude to some of the things you've mentioned there as well in terms of the pros and cons of it. So it's good that you've sort of echoed that as well in your answer. So good stuff. Thank you. Just moving on then to our next question. And we, in our program, we love our case studies, basically. They're our bread and butter, essentially. So could you give us, if you've got one, hopefully you have, a success story of a company that you've helped recently, where you sort of helped guide them and sort of showed some success moving forward on their journey, if that's possible?
Yeah, so slightly annoyingly, this is a solution that they came to themselves, so I can't claim full credit for inspiring this. But it was it's a company in Glasgow that's a salad bar, of all things. Yeah. So a salad bar in Glasgow is fairly memorable. It is, they were delivering lunchtime deliveries, so they typically open 10 till 3. They do lunchtime service, and they were delivering to local offices. And they had a real challenge in that the cost of fuel was going up and up and up. And so they switched to e-cargo bikes. And there's like a local delivery service they partnered with to deliver these lunchtime kits. So you get, you know, like a salad box with salmon or falafel or whatever. And then they would deliver that to offices in the area, in the city centre. And they found a huge amount of growth as soon as they switched to e-bikes. Because they were using electric cargo bikes, they could deliver far quicker, low emissions, and far cheaper, because they weren't paying for diesel, they weren't getting stuck in traffic, they weren't under the pressure of like ULEZ or emissions factors coming in as well. Yeah. And they just managed to grow that side of the business where they were growing their online delivery as a result of that. That also, you know, decarbonized them because they weren't buying diesel anymore. So because they weren't spending, I don't know how much it was, but you know, £500 a month or whatever it is on diesel, that came off of their carbon footprint. And the electric cargo bike, okay, there's probably a bit of electricity there to be used, but it's maybe a couple of kilos a month, if that, in terms of carbon emission equivalent. Yeah. So I think that's a really nice one, especially in urban areas where electric cargo bikes are a great way to do much higher density, higher frequency deliveries than you can in a van. It's not going to work for, if you're moving pianos from Aberdeen to Coventry, maybe not, but you know.
And I'd imagine with that answer, that links back into what we discussed previously in terms of that company perception, and that their marketing was probably really focused on that as a win-win-win, wasn't it? I would have thought.
Well, you're certainly delivering a massive, like, 2x3 meter box that can have your branding on the side of it. So it's a great touch point. And, you know, I think people like to see those things, because that's one less van on the road. It's less traffic. It's less air pollution.
Perfect answer. Thank you. So just leading on to what is the last question then? And this might draw on to what we've previously discussed, but could you just give us one actionable, budget-friendly step that small businesses can take today to start moving forward? What's your one, your headline point, as it were, in terms of what to do moving forward?
Yeah, I'm going to be cheeky and do a quick plug here, because this is something that we've been, over the past 3 years of developing stuff, this is what we've culminated into, the Small 99 Action Box. So it's £150, it's relatively affordable. That then gets you a carbon footprint and a way to engage your team and a way to start action planning. And that will align with PPN 0621 requirements or tendering frameworks as guidance in that box to get what you need. So this is really where, you know, you can go onto the website and use the calculator on its own for free if you want to get started with. But what we found is the biggest challenge that small businesses are facing is engaging their team to actually gather up all those little stories that every decision that every staff member is making are on sustainability into one space. And so if you are being asked by a supplier for a, you know, PPN 0621 tendering document, then actually writing that can feel quite overwhelming. until you engage everybody to submit something to that and pull it together. And that's really where the small line out action box comes in, is it engages your team to have the confidence to build those stories and have the ownership over the decarbonisation plan yourselves. And you can run it yourself internally. It comes with a guidebook on how to do everything. And as I say, it's £150, so much cheaper than a consultant or anything else, but it gives you the confidence in that sort of the resources and the actions that we've refined over the past 3 years.
Okay, good answer. Thank you very much. So I hope that has given our audience some guidance on how to start and what to do moving forward. So firstly, thank you to Adam for your time today. Much appreciated. And thanks for joining us again. Thank you also to Maria, who does all of our production of the podcast as well. And I'm going to just end by giving you a bit of a background to what we do at the Decarbonisation Net Zero Programme. As you may already know, we cover the West Midlands Combined Authority and Warwickshire areas. And essentially, our sweet spot is energy efficiency. So we will help your business identify areas of inefficiencies. We'll do you a nice energy audit and provide you with an energy report that shows you where things are inefficient, as it were. But then we also have grant funding to put towards those improvement measures that will drive down that energy usage. So things like solar panels, more efficient boilers, heat pumps, insulation, and so on and so forth. So if that is of interest, the link for our programme will be in the podcast description, along with the other things we've talked about today. So a link to Small 99 will be in there. The previous podcast from May 2023 will pop in there as well, when myself and Adam spoke previously. So lots of resource there to go at. I hope that's been of interest. I'm Jonathan Howell. Thanks for listening.